From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market reported as the 6th day of March, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vanks of Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. A bit later in the program, the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana, will join us to look at the cash grain market. We'll talk about the weather forecast with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City as we close out our half hour together today. And along the way, we'll hear from Darrell Good and an update of the price projections he made for the new era price plateaus about 5 years ago. There are some adjustments that need to be made. He's done that, and we'll have all the numbers as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
In Chicago, on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly lower. The nearby contract for the soft red winter wheat in the March at 6.76. It was down 20 and a quarter for the day. May at 681 and a quarter, 24 and three quarters lower. And July at 694 and a quarter, down 15 and a quarter. September there, 695 and three quarters, down 22. July hard red at 750 and three quarters on a settlement price, up 8.5 cents. Corn pit back in Chicago. And these are closes, 708 and three quarters, down 23 and a quarter. May at 689, down 20 cents. July at 672, down 14. And September at 566 and a half, down 10 and a half. December futures 544.5, 7.5 lower, and the March contract at 553 and three quarters, down 8.25. May contract at $5.62 and a quarter, down 6.75. March soybeans for the day, $14.84 and a half, a settlement price now, down 12 cents. The May futures a half lower at $14.66, and July beans at $14.48 and three quarters, a settlement price a penny higher. August up 2 cents at $14.08 and a half. November beans at $12.78 and three quarters, up 3 and a quarter. Bean meal futures finished at $4.34.20, down 70 cents. Bean oil was 14 higher at $50.06. Mercantile exchange June live cattle at $123.95, down 52 and a half for the day. April feeders at $142.25, down $1.35, and lean hogs finished the May at $87.35, down 35 cents on this Monday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day, April contract $90.44, down 38 cents. The RBOB at 312.5, that's down $2.03, and the ethanol at 239.8 is 3.9 cents lower for the afternoon. Natural gas at 348.1, 4.8 lower. The heating oil or diesel fuel at 0.1 cent lower, rather higher at $2.97 and 3 cents. And the gold futures on the day were unchanged at $1,574.90 an ounce. U.S. dollar at 82.45. That's up 0.37 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. Mostly cloudy this afternoon, a high of just 32 degrees. On a north-northwest wind at 13 to 15 miles an hour, gusting to 20 miles an hour. Tonight, partly cloudy and a low of 22. North-northwest winds again at 6 to 13 miles an hour. And then tomorrow for Wednesday, we'll look forward to sunny skies and a high of 37 degrees on a north wind at about 6 miles an hour. Thursday night, mostly clear, a low of 22. Friday, sunny and 44. Friday night, partly cloudy and 30. Saturday, sunny skies and 50 degrees. Saturday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy and 41. On Sunday, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy and 54. Sunday night, rain likely, cloudy and 36. And Monday, rain will continue, mostly cloudy and a high near 44. Monday evening, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy and 32. And on Tuesday of next week, partly sunny and a high near 47 degrees. A more complete look at the weather forecast comes up at the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated right here on the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's Wednesday, March the 6th. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on the phone line. Jackie Veck, she's at Stewart Peterson right here in Champaign County to take up the agricultural futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, what a successful day we had over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Thank you so much for your participation. It really made things go very, very well.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and what a great opportunity for all the farmers who were there to be able to hear all the different opinions and even to be able to exchange ideas with each other. It was a great day. I really, really enjoyed it.
For those who were unable to make the trip there to the Beef House yesterday, and there would have been a few that didn't make it because of the weather forecast and some others that simply weren't able to make it in for other reasons, we will post everything to our website at willag.org. That'll probably happen sometime tomorrow, at least the audio. We did record video as well. Probably try to put some of that up as well over the next week or so, but by tomorrow you should be able to take a look on our website at willag.org, and you'll find the audio from the all-day agricultural outlook. One other item before we get into the futures markets, actually two probably, because you're on both of these events tonight, Jackie. You and I will be in Lincoln, Illinois, at the Logan County Fairgrounds, the U of I building at 7 o'clock, along with Chip Nellinger and Pete Manhart and Gary Schnitke. So that one starts at 7 and open and available for everybody to come by and drop in and ask you questions. And then tomorrow evening, we'll be in Jacksonville, along with Mike Zuzulo and Matt Bennett and Gary Schnitke. That one starts at 6 o'clock. It's at Hamilton's, which is right there in the midst of Jacksonville, the middle of Jacksonville. It's Hamilton's Catering. So if you're interested, that one has on Thursday evening a dinner involved with it. No need to pre-register for that one. Just show up at 6 o'clock. But Jackie Vakes and I will both be there. Jackie, I'm looking forward to traveling and hearing what you have to say on both of those days as well.
Well, it's great to be able to get out of the area and you know, and especially getting to Jacksonville, where it's more difficult for people to be able to hear us. But I'm excited about it. We had a great meeting at Belleville
last week.
Yeah, so it'll be good.
All right, good. Now, let's talk a little bit about what happened in the marketplace today. And I think maybe I want to start with the CME Group and the changes that they plan to make in trading hours. Once again, we'll hear this in the news segment, but CME Group has decided that they're going to change up things, and they're going back at least in part to the closes at 1:15 in the afternoon.
Yeah, it's going to be different. They're going to open at 7 at night, which I think is a good idea, and then they will run until on the electronic till 7:45 a.m. They will pause the market from 7:45 a.m. until 8:30, at which time they will open not only the electronic but the open outcry. So that means open outcry will open an hour earlier, and then rather than closing at 2 o'clock, they're going to close at 1:15 like the old hours were. So talk about confusing the world.
And it starts,
they're doing it.
I think that starts April the 8th, so we'll be back to two trading sessions for the day, an overnight trade and then the day trade, which will coincide this time around with the electronic open outcry. Having the same hours from 8:30 to 1:15 should make for some interesting changes. I guess maybe they'll settle down, and I'm wondering, I was thinking about this just a bit, Jackie, whether by the time we get to April 8th, whether this will signal a final change in the CME Group's open hours and the settling down of the marketplace and the volatility that we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years.
Well, I don't know if you can settle down the volatility based on this, but it certainly has had somewhat of an impact. But the big thing now is, you know, we have a USDA report. We've got one coming out on Friday at 11 a.m.
Right.
So now instead of having 3 hours to trade it till 2 o'clock, we're going to have 2 hours and 15 minutes to trade it. And so I know from going to the USDA meeting when it was asked if the CME would change their hours, would they change back? And they said absolutely not. And so we'll see once if absolutely is absolutely or not. But, you know, it does complicate things a bit, but we'll get used to it. It's just like anything else. Change is not easy.
It's never easy in New York today. Let's switch venues from Chicago to New York. Mm-hmm. I think the Dow Jones Industrial Average went to another new high, but I didn't see whether it stayed there or not.
Well, it went to 14,320, and it's currently at 14,304 at the moment. You know, so it certainly hasn't lost very much, I can tell you that. It's kind of amazing. I think that basically when you look at the whole situation, it is what's pushing the dollar higher, too. The idea that why is the Dow going higher? I think it's because some of the sequester information that's coming out. You know, they're talking about how it's going to take months to move forward with some of the cuts that are going to happen, and I think the Dow is just feeling a lot more comfortable with that. Now, on the other side, you know, a higher dollar is never a friend of ours. Something we heard about yesterday and I've talked about before is currency wars. And we're experiencing some of the back end of the currency wars from the standpoint that we've seen Brazil put some things in place. We have Japan doing some things to keep themselves from being outside the competitive edge of the export market. And so with our U.S. dollar going higher, that never makes it easy. And I think that was part of what we saw today in the market in general, and also, you know, magnified by all the numbers that are coming out saying that they're going to raise corn ending stocks, that they're going to raise wheat ending stocks. It was just kind of an ugly day.
Those are the numbers that would be released on Friday of this week. What are your expectations there?
Well, I myself think that we could actually see the corn numbers maybe stay about where they are. I do expect them to drop the export numbers again because of the pitiful pace that we're at. But at the same time, I think we could see feed usage bounce back up higher and maybe take it out of the picture. And so I don't expect much of a change. Some guys are saying going from 632 to 640 to 649, which it's not a huge difference, but it's something to trade on. The big question now is, you know, USDA is closed today because of weather. So we don't know if we're going to get export reports tomorrow morning. We don't know if it'll have an impact. I doubt very much if it will on Fridays because that's an 11 a.m. report. And so I myself expect to see tighter numbers on beans in the U.S., probably a little larger number on wheat, and that put pressure on wheat because wheat, they talked today about world wheat numbers getting bigger, and the expectation is for that report on Friday to show a larger number. So that means wheat's going to have to compete with corn in the feed venue. And so there's just an awful lot of information that Friday's report will bring some closure to, and then we'll move on from there.
A quick word, speaking of wheat, on competition with corn, and maybe 15 or 20 seconds is all.
Okay. You know, I think when you look at wheat, anytime you're below 50 cents, you know, and a wheat bushel is larger than a corn bushel. So we right now, the equivalent of corn is about 750 if you're looking at March compared to where we are in wheat. So it is definitely competitive. There's no question. You are limited on how much you can increase in a ration, but it certainly, traders certainly don't see it that way.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That is Jackie Veig. She's from Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. She and I will be in Lincoln at the Logan County Fairgrounds this evening. That starts at 7 o'clock. We look forward to seeing you there tonight. Now here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, a congressional hearing yesterday promised to discuss the state of the rural economy, but the vast majority of the hearing was about the state of the sequester and why USDA is not doing more to minimize the impacts. Members of the House Agriculture Committee highlighted their problems with the way USDA would implement budget cuts. In particular, congressmen wanted assurances from Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack that sequester cuts would not disrupt the safety or markets of the meatpacking industry through furloughing meat inspectors. Yesterday, Vilsack would not provide any such assurances, saying, quote, "No matter how you slice it, no matter how you dice it, there is nothing you can do without impacting the frontline inspectors." USDA is sending out letters to union members that furloughs are possible. Japan says it will not enter in negotiations on a Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement unless the other parties to the talks allow Japan to continue its high tariffs on a number of agricultural products. The Japanese government has identified so-called sensitive products it wants to protect with high tariffs, subsidies, or both. Among them, rice, milk powder, and butter, beef, sugar, wheat, and barley. Japan's main farm organization claims that if tariffs on the agriculture products are abolished, that Japan's farm and fisheries production would decrease by $32 billion a year. CME Group announced new grains and oil seeds electronic trading hours yesterday after hearing from more than 4,000 customers. The new electronic hours will be Sunday to Friday from 7 p.m. to 7:45 a.m. On Mondays through Fridays, there will be a break in electronic trading from 7:45 a.m. to 8:30 a.m., and then trade will continue from 8:30 a.m. to 1:15 p.m. The change affects Chicago Board of Trade grains and Kansas City Board of Trade wheat and is pending CFTC approval. If approved by the CFTC, the new hours will begin on April the 8th. The National Grain and Feed Association says they'll be evaluating the new hours carefully, while CFTC is reviewing the rule, noting that the 7:45 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. break exposes cash grain purchases and sales made during that time to added risk. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report, Commodity Week, and a couple of our Will Ag Outlook panels this week. Tonight, we'll be in Logan County on the fairgrounds there in Lincoln, Illinois, at the U of I Extension building. Starts at 7 o'clock. Jackie Vakes, along with Pete Manhart and Chip Nellinger, and our own U of I Farm Management and Crop Insurance Specialist, Gary Schnittke. It's open if you want to come. That's at 7 o'clock tonight in Logan County at the fairgrounds in Lincoln, Illinois, at the Extension building. It's just right there at the corner of Old Route 66 and Route 10 and 121, so it's really simple to get to. We hope to see you there tonight at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow, we'll be in Jacksonville. Again, Gary Schnittke will be with us. We'll be at Hamilton. This one's sponsored by Farm Credit Services. There is a meal. Starts at 6 o'clock. It's at Hamilton's in Jacksonville. Gary Schnittke will be along with Jackie Vakes, Matt Bennett, and Mike Zuzlo. There is dinner involved with that one. You don't have to register. Just show up. That's at Hamilton's in Jacksonville at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening. Tonight, again, we'll be in Logan County, Lincoln, Illinois, on the fairgrounds there. That one starts at 7 o'clock. They're both open, and I hope to see you at one of those two meetings. Now up next, 5 years ago, the University of Illinois Ag Economist projected a near doubling of cash prices for corn, soybeans, and wheat. I'll have more on what the number crunchers have done to revisit that project and those projections and how they've made some adjustments. It was apparent in 2005 that Congress had institutionalized a structural change in the commodity markets. It's the year this nation focused on renewable energy sources. Primary among them was a fuel made from corn, ethanol. University of Illinois ag economist Scott Irwin and Daryl Good thought then that this new demand base would have more than just a short-term influence on the price of commodities. And, as Daryl Good explains, that it might just kickstart a new price plateau era.
Recognizing that the previous era of prices had lasted something over 30 years, so didn't really try to define how long the new era would last, but trying to get some handle on what might be the average price and distribution of prices in this new era. And for corn, when we looked at Illinois prices, a monthly average, we suggested we might be at in the range of $4.60 as an average, $10.58 for soybeans and about $5.80 for wheat.
Those projections are pretty close. Daryl Good and Scott Irwin just completed a study looking back at the average Central Illinois prices from December 2006 to December 2012.
The average price in Illinois for corn was $4.74. For soybeans, I think $11.11, and for wheat, $5.88. So the averages were fairly close to what we projected, a little higher than projected for soybeans. The distribution wasn't exactly like we forecast, but close. And we did see some very extreme prices during the past 5 years, and that's what previous history would suggest, that you would see a very wide variation around the average.
The next step in the process, as Good, was to look at the evidence and decide if an adjustment to the original projection should be made. And as it turns out, the answer to that question is yes and no.
For corn and wheat, we decided no, that 460, 580 corn and wheat was about the right expectation. But soybeans, maybe we were a little too conservative. We had forecast soybean prices as a ratio to corn, 2.3 to 1. And I guess the evidence the past 5 years would suggest maybe a higher ratio would be a better expectation. So we would think maybe a 2.4 to 1 ratio, and saying, you know, just a shade over $11 would be maybe a more realistic expectation of an average moving forward on soybeans.
You may read more on this topic from Daryl Good and Scott Irwin online. Look for two articles with New Era in the headline on the Farm Doc Daily website. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Let's check the cash grain market. Scott Butcher of the Anderson's Climbers Facility in Logansport, Indiana, on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Scott. Tell me about basis for corn, please.
Well, basis, really, we have not seen much change here lately, Todd. I mean, it's pretty much similar to where it was last week. We're still around the 40 to 45 over for corn, most places in the area, and soybeans actually very similar, around 40 to 45 over as well.
Competition is either very stiff in your area or there simply isn't corn left. Which is it?
Yeah, I think that competition is very good right now. I mean, I think everyone is, you know, obviously concerned about the smaller crop and going forward being able to find corn.
And your expectations as to how much corn is left in the countryside?
Definitely getting cleaned up. I mean, it seems like we talk to more and more folks every day that are getting things cleaned up on the farm and you know, moving on. And obviously there was a lot of corn that moved in fall, and that's just now, you know, in a lot of places just now getting discovered.
Getting cleaned up nearby means you must be drawing from a much further away. At 45 cents, that might be the case. How far are they trucking in now?
Yeah, I would say the farthest probably would be up in northern Indiana. We've seen more corn moving from that area just because of the lack of a presence up there with new energy, not producing ethanol anymore, not being up and running. You know, definitely creates a void up there for a processor presence. And so we've seen a few folks from the northern Indiana area moving down here that we don't normally see.
Do you expect to have to rail anything in the future before we get to the new crop?
I don't think so. You know, it doesn't feel like it today anyway.
All right. How about for beans?
Beans, very similar story. We're, you know, starting to see a lot more folks that are cleaned up on soybeans or have already moved them. I think with the inverse, you know, obviously a lot of folks wanted to get them priced, so
okay.
Kind of the name of the game.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Scott Butcher is with the Andersons. He's there at the Climbers Facility in Logansport, Indiana. Back in 2 minutes with the Ag Weather Forecast.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Chocolate Cheesecake Day. The first mention of cheesecake in history was during the ancient Olympic Games. Cato the Elder, who was born in 234 BC, wrote of cheesecake preparation in his farming manual, De Agricultura. It's the oldest surviving work of Latin prose, which looked at up-to-date agricultural practices. American-style cheesecakes relying on cream cheese was invented in 1872. This new high-fat cheese was developed for the Empire Cheese Company and later became known as Philadelphia brand cream cheese, which is now widely used in the creation of cheesecakes. It's also National Frozen Food Day. It was Clarence Birdseye who invented and commercialized a method for quick freezing food products. In 1923, Birdseye used a $7 electric fan, buckets of brine, and cakes of ice for packing fresh food into waxed cardboard boxes and flash freezing them under high pressure. In 1930, retail frozen foods went on sale for the first time in Springfield, Massachusetts. Various fruits, vegetables, meat, and fish were offered for sale. On this day in agricultural history in 1899, aspirin was patented by Felix Hoffmann of the German company Bayer. Aspirin was first sold as a powder. The first tablets were produced in 1915. And in 1912 on this date, Nabisco debuted the Oreo cookie. Originally, the Oreo was mound-shaped and came in two flavors, lemon meringue or cream. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line, Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm told, Drew, that the heavy storm we had moved through the northern part of Illinois and had some impact here in our part of the world yesterday has moved off to the east and is causing some serious problems there. Can you take us through some of the storm totals and what it really means to the United States?
Well, some of the totals have been fairly impressive, running in general 4 to 11 inches, but there's been some totals as high as 14 coming out of actually northern parts of Illinois, and some of the heavier snows in the eastern parts of the Midwest have caused some significant travel issues, obviously. In fact, we've had a lot of travel issues across the Midwest. The good news is that the majority of the storm system is winding down. In fact, it's already out of the majority of the Midwest at this time. And we still have a lot of cloudiness hanging on behind the system, and we've got some cool air, but mostly nothing more than a few flakes of snow every once in a while in the heart of the region. So we are going to move in the right direction now with some improving conditions for a little while. And I say a little while because we do have another storm system that will be brewing in the central U.S. plains as we get into Friday and to Saturday. So we're going to have a couple of days here where the weather is going to be a little bit better. But one of the concerns I have at the moment is that we've put down a lot of snow. There's a lot of moisture standing on top of the ground in the form of snow. And over these next 2 days, we're going to start a warming trend, and we'll start melting it fairly quickly, especially as we move from Friday into Saturday. And the rapid snow melt will likely create some significant runoff on its own. But right after that, we bring in the second storm system, and it overruns most of the Midwest from late Saturday night, actually, into Monday. And some areas can get 1 to 2 inches of rainfall from this new storm system. So adding that on top of the runoff from the current snow that we have out there could create some issues with low-lying flooding in some locations. I don't think we're going to do a lot of damage to winter wheat, but it might create some more travel issues on some roads that go through those lower areas. So it's going to be an interesting few days. Very sloppy, that's for sure.
Turn your attention to the beginning of the growing season in the United States. Tell me how Texas is proceeding. Some corn planting happening there, but not much really happening in the Deep South or the Delta regions because I think they've been awfully wet.
Yes, it has. Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, those southern Arkansas, those are places where the planting of corn is quite often getting rather aggressive at this point in time, and they have not been able to do that thus far. The same is true for southern Georgia, southern Alabama, northern Florida. Those areas over there in the southeast corner of the country got deluges of rain here as recently as last week, and it's really much too wet for a field work to advance. On the other side of the coin, in South Texas, it's been very dry, and some of the irrigated land is being worked, but a lot of the rain-fed cropland is just not, it's just too parched, and we're going to have to wait for a significant rain event to come along to make a difference for them. Now, as we go forward through the coming week, the lower parts of the Delta will probably see the best opportunity for planting. The conditions will get much better there starting really tomorrow and going into Saturday. They'll have some warmer temperatures and continuation of drier conditions. So if there's going to be any aggressive field work, it's going to be right there in the southern parts of the Delta. Everybody else is going to have to fight for getting into the fields for a while longer. And again, we are very concerned about Texas and Mexico, for that matter. It's extremely dry down there the third year in a row.
Thank you so much, Drew.
Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that wraps up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'll see some of you this evening in Logan County at the Illinois Extension Building. I'm Todd Gleason.